Hauptsache raus, der Outdoor-Podcast.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Hauptsache raus, dem Podcast des Outdoor-Magazins. Mein Name ist Christian Ziemek und ich führe euch heute durchs Programm. Bei uns geht es um alles, was draußen Spaß macht, was uns den Kopf frei pustet und uns aus der Enge des Alltags und der Städte rausführt und in die große oder vielleicht auch die kleine Freiheit. Vor allem aber in die Natur. Und darum soll es auch heute gehen. Wie bringen wir Outdoor und Abenteuer in unserem Alltag unter? Und haben wir vielleicht viel mehr Gelegenheit und Zeit dafür, als uns bewusst ist? Wir haben jemanden zu Gast, der darauf garantiert Antworten hat. Alistair Humphreys, er ist Buchautor, Weltreisender und Abenteurer im großen Maßstab, aber auch Erfinder der sogenannten Micro-Adventures. Welcome at Outdoor Magazine, Alistair.
Dankeschön.
Ihr hört schon, diese Folge findet auf Englisch statt. Ebenfalls mit am Tisch sitzt Katharina Hübner. Sie ist Reiseredakteurin des Outdoor-Magazins. Hallo Katharina.
Hallo Christian.
Alistair, I just introduced you as a large-scale adventurer, but what was your latest really small-scale but mind-refreshing micro-adventure?
My latest small adventure would be climbing a tree. What okay. I'm doing this year is I'm climbing the same tree every month. So my calendar pops up once a month and it says, ding, go climb a tree. And I turn off my emails and go climb a tree. And what I've enjoyed of that is I'm doing the same tree in the same place each month. So you notice from winter with no leaves, spring comes and then all the blue flowers. And when I went a couple of weeks ago, there were blackberries to eat. So I'm really enjoying just one small tree over a year.
Well, first of all, hi, Alistair. Thanks for coming. I haven't said that yet.
Hello.
It sounds great with a tree. But actually, you are a large-scale adventurer. You've been Adventurer of the Year 2012 by National Geographic. You've cycled around the world in 4 years, crossed India by foot. So when did you come up with micro-adventures? And what is a micro-adventure?
Okay. A micro-adventure, I think, is an adventure. It's however you define adventure yourself. But I think it's the difference only is that it's small, short, local, cheap, and simple. So it's everything you try and get in big adventures, depending on who you are, but just finding something that's so easy that you can actually do it rather than just dreaming about it for 10 years. How I got into doing it, I'd been doing big adventures for quite a lot of years. And the big change for me was going from just thinking, oh, I love doing this stuff, I love big adventures, to starting to think, why aren't more people doing this? And people like reading about my adventures and watching the films I make, but why aren't more people doing it? So that's when I started to try and look at the things that stop people having adventures and see how I could overcome those things.
And is that really a new concept, or is it something some people have always been doing, but now you've just given it the name? Because I know there's people who've, I don't know, crossed mountain ridges when there's a full moon night or slept outside without a tent. That's also, there were people doing this 20 years ago without calling it micro-adventures.
Exactly. I haven't invented anything at all. All I've done is give a name to something. But really, yeah, I'm just saying to people, hey, go hiking and biking and camping and swimming. I definitely have not invented anything. The only difference, I suppose, is giving it that name, I think, has helped give it a focus to people. Plus, of course, with social media, having a simple name and a hashtag has really, really helped grow a community of people on the internet who have started to do this thing. So really, I think for something to become popular, you need to see that other people like you are doing this sort of thing. I think most people want to follow what someone similar to them is doing. But by making this hashtag and the online community, I think that was when it started to grow, really.
So it's an inspirational thing as well. I mean,
I don't know. It's a community, I feel it as. So when I first started doing it, I spent a lot of time in the first few years of not just doing my micro adventures, because you know I'm a adventurer. So it supposedly is my job. I'm a man. I'm quite fit. I've got enough money, I've got some spare time. So it's pretty easy for me to go and do these things. So I spent quite a lot of time in the early days sharing examples of other people who are doing micro adventures. So women or families or old people or people who are not normally doing this sort of stuff, trying to share what they were doing under the umbrella of micro adventures. And so I really was trying to build an online community. That was what I put a lot of time into in the first few years of it.
Did you get a lot of conflicts with people during your first micro adventures, despite climbing a tree during the whole year?
No. I mean,
were there people that where you made an overnighter on their ground and they complained the next day about it or something like this?
No, that's never ever happened to me.
Okay.
I mean, but it's always the thing that people worry about, because a lot of what I'm encouraging people to do is go sleep on a hill. So go out of your town and go sleep a hill. And people worry about that, whether it's dangerous or frightening, or is it illegal?
Are there ticks coming and eating me up?
Yeah, and ticks, I think, is a different thing, because I think that is something to pay attention to. But worrying about the legality and the safety, you're just sleeping on a hill. You're doing nothing that's of any harm or damage at all. But still, I think that's something people often worry about. So I encourage people when they first start to maybe go with two or three other friends to make you feel a bit more brave, make it a bit less frightening, and just arrive late in the evening. So as sun sets, leave early in the morning, just when the sun's coming up. No one's out there and everyone's at home watching television. So it's you have the hill to yourself, and that's something I love on it.
But let me just add that reminds me, is it legal in England? Because in Germany, you're not allowed to set up a tent like anywhere, like you're in Norway. I mean, it's allowed. And whereas when you don't use a tent, when it's bivouac, that's kind of we say Grauzone. It's not really illegal. It's not super legal, but not really illegal.
So yeah, in Scandinavia, they have what they call allemansrätten, every man's right to go wherever they want and do what they want, which is wonderful. I find this, you know, that we worry so much about, is it legal to sleep on a hill? And yet I reckon nearly everyone drives their car over the speed limit past a school of small children, or which is also is illegal and a really bad thing to do. But we all do that and we don't have these discussions about that. But putting up a tent on a hill, I mean, is it legal or not? No policeman in the world is going to put you in prison for that at all. However, to actually answer the technical part of your question, in England, it's not legal to sleep on a hill.
Okay.
No, but in my mind, it's not in the slightest bit wrong. Yeah. Of course, you don't want to be near someone's house. You don't want to damage a farm. If something's obviously private, you should respect that. But if you're on top of a hill, is that legal or not? I think that's very low down the list of things that the legal system needs to worry about.
Yeah, that's what we people think about being in the forest having adventures, because I, from a mountain biking background, for me, almost every micro adventure, which is a mountain bike tour, is illegal in this part of Germany we are in right now, because you can't ride on trails that are narrower than 2 meters. So maybe that's the heritage where it's all coming from, this worry.
But there's a big difference between something being illegal and being wrong. And there's a big difference between being illegal versus going to get thrown in prison for sleeping on a hill. So I personally, I've written a book about a supposedly illegal activity, I suppose. And the lawyers haven't seemed to mind yet. And also, firstly, no one ever finds me when I'm on top of a hill. And if they did, I'd just smile and be polite. Yeah. And they'd either think I was interesting or a bit kind of weird. And the worst thing that would happen is I'd say, okay, sorry, I'll leave and not come back to your hill again. So I've never had any problems with it.
Yeah. Speaking technical issues, what would you remind, what do I need for a micro adventure? Is there gadgets that are necessary?
Also, what is the perfect beginner's micro adventure?
Well, I think the perfect beginner's microadventure is one that requires as few gadgets and equipment as possible. Yeah. And of course, I think once you've tried outdoor activities quite a lot, you learn if you want to do it and therefore you want to spend more money on it. And of course, spending more money, you get better equipment. But I think for beginning, it's important just to go with the equipment you have, try something, learn from your mistakes, and then get some ideas as whether you want to invest in more. So I'll give you a sample micro-adventure, which I really try and encourage, is for people one evening after work, instead of just going home from the office to watch TV, is to get a few friends and then get on the train out of town for half an hour or an hour to a hill, climb a hill with your friends, sleep on top of the hill for the night. So what you would need for that is very little. So to keep it simple, you all meet at the train station beforehand, you eat in the restaurant there, have a beer, talk about your plans. So you don't need any more food, head out of town, climb the hill. What you need for that, you'd need a rucksack, a sleeping bag, some warm clothes, a raincoat, a warm hat, a light, a water bottle, and a sort of sleeping mat, really. And that's the bare minimum. I always recommend a bivy bag, which is like a, I don't know what the German
word is.
Okay, which is basically like a waterproof cover for a sleeping bag. And they can be very, very, very cheap for your first attempt. And that's all you need. You wake up in the morning, get back on the train, come into town, have breakfast, go to work. So for the start, I think most people own nearly all of that equipment anyway, even if they're not interested in the outdoors. So I'd try that for a few times and then decide if you want to start to get a more comfortable sleeping mat. I think that's the that's when you really start to get luxury, when you get a nice, comfortable sleeping mat.
All this talking about adventures, it kind of, so it makes me wonder, would you say that our everyday life lacks adventures? Does it need more adventure, or the like of the average person?
Yeah, I think most people's life needs more adventure. I think most people's life, and I include myself here, most people, so let's say all of our lives need more adventure. We need more time outside. We're in a room now. We've shut out every pretense of daylight. We're hiding in this room we're speaking in now. Yeah. So we need to be outdoors more. We need to be doing exercise more. We need to turn off our phones and our emails and listen to the birds sing. So I really think for health reasons, physical and mental health, that more people need to go and sleep on hills more often, for sure. I think it's becoming a crisis of our generation, for sure.
It can, of course, be an elementary experience, because nowadays I think most people's life, the experience or the adventure is like, will I get the tomatoes for the salad I planned in the evening? And afterwards you will experience maybe that you don't need them.
This is something I find really good about this, the night on the hill idea, is that, yeah, of course you would get a better sleep in your bed at home. It's not very comfortable, for sure. I'm not pretending that. So you will wake up quite tired. You might be a bit cold.
Yeah.
But you're in nature, which these days is so unusual, especially, and I think this is a big difference, doing it without a tent. And for the first time you try that, it's a really strange feeling, because you're lying on a hill and there is the universe, and you feel the wind, and you see a bird, and you hear an owl, and you feel the wind on your face. You are outside.
It's a lot of stimulation.
Yeah. So, so you get a terrible sleep. But it's crazy that is so unusual for us now. And what I notice now on my longer trips, so if I do a trip of maybe a few days or even a week or 2 weeks or something, I notice there becomes a time when I get used to being outside again. And I start to notice what time the sun sets, and I notice how big the moon is tonight, and I start to get that habit. And that reminds me that for most of my life, I don't have that. For most of my life, I'm inside with the air conditioning on and turning the lights on, and that's my normal life. So for me, that's a real important reason to get out, sleep on a hill, and turn off the phone for the night.
Is it a terrible feeling to come back to civilization after
a nice shower, hot drink?
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's good, as you say, Catherine, it's good to come back and appreciate life. So when you have a shower, you remember, oh, this is amazing. Yeah. And you get in your bed and you think, oh, this is amazing, rather than just taking it for granted every day. And of course, you're a bit hungry, so you open your fridge and you're like, oh, tomatoes. Yeah, so it's, you get that appreciation. But on the other side of it, when I take the train back, and as the stations gradually get bigger as you head back towards London, and more people until you're squashed. And I do then start to think, oh man, what am I doing? I should just go back to the hills more often. I quite often like to have fires when I'm away, which is another legal question altogether we can talk about if we have time. But what I love is the smell of fires. So the next day when you're on the train into London, you stink of smoke. And I love that. I love to go into meetings in London just smelling of smoke like a wild man.
You know what just came to my mind? If England came up with the idea of having a Friluftsliv at school, you'd be the perfect teacher. You know, they have it in Norway. And I think it's a really good thing. Also, as you said, that we are too far away from nature. And there they have the school children and teach them how to make fires, how to, I don't know, find something to eat, how to hike and all this. Yeah. Wouldn't it be good if, I don't know, schools in Germany and England and everywhere had that?
Oh, it'd be wonderful. It's starting to become more common in Britain that under forest schools for young kids to just do more teaching in the outdoors. It's really, yeah, it's such an important thing. But, you know, it's important for adults as well. Wouldn't it be great if adults, instead of having meetings around this boring conference table we're sitting at here, if you did them when you went and climbed a tree in the park and had the meeting, or just sit by a river or something, just trying to take more of our normal life into the outdoors. I think that would be a good thing.
Did you ever get the feeling to get lost, to not want to come back? Because I know a few people who are on the bike traveling around the world for 8 or 10 years, and they have, I feel when I talk to them that they have problems to get used to the idea of ever coming back.
So I spent 4 years on a bike cycling around the world, and by the end, so that just became my life. And coming towards the end of it, and I was trying to decide, do I come home and stop? I realized that the easy option would be just to keep cycling around the world forever, to keep going, because I knew that world now. I was good at it, and it's kind of easy. And by then, I was writing 2 or 3 articles a year, or I was writing a few articles, just enough to pay for my life, because you need hardly anything. And that was easy, and actually much harder and more of a challenge, and therefore maybe more of an adventure, was to come home back to the real world and to get back on with that. But I look at my time cycling around the world as the best thing I've ever done, but also as a bit of a curse. Do you know do you know Pandora's box? What's that in German?
Yeah, it's Pandora's box.
Okay.
Die Büchse der Pandora.
So I really feel with that trip that it is a bit of a curse. You know, I open this up and so much adventure and freedom and wilderness and so many wonderful things, but I've always found real life difficult since then. So I think, you know, cycling around the world is the best thing I've ever done, but I don't think it's the route to happiness. Does that make sense?
Of course. Yeah.
But you then continued going for adventures, right? I mean, well, it was
that's the start of micro adventures.
What then became my life was that I'd go away doing a big expedition, like rowing across the ocean or walking across a desert. And when I'm away, when I'm doing that, I'm like, why have I left behind home and friends and family and community? This is what's important. So I go back home, and after a while of friends and family community, I think, oh man, real life is so boring. I need to get back out to the desert. So yeah, I've definitely had that for quite a lot of years. And what microadventures has been really helpful for me personally for is mixing the two, having real life and adventure life. And instead of them being separate, it's just starting to come together into one life. So the simple example of I'm busy with my emails because I'm trying to, you know, I have a job of these days, but I still want to climb trees. So how just trying to bring all of it into one thing together has been quite helpful for me.
Yeah. But was, as you just said, friends and family, you have a wife and 2 children. Was that also a reason to reduce the big long adventures and to specialize more in micro adventures, because I guess it's easier with family life.
Yes.
Yes.
Once.
Yes.
Simple. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. If I wasn't married with two kids, I would not be sitting here today. I would be somewhere far, far away, probably on a bicycle. But there's good sides to all things. So now I have a normal life, which I love.
Yeah.
And somehow I also want to be this wild, free adventure guy, and trying to combine the two into one one life that works with these different parts of life is where microadventures have come in. And I think that's why they've been interesting to lots of people, because a lot of people with normal office jobs and normal lives still want to have adventure. So it's a way to try and bring the two worlds together. I hope.
We also in Germany, we have a guy who's big in or specializing in micro-adventures or micro-abenteuer. You know him, Christoph Hörster. And what I find interesting, he says that micro-adventures need certain rules. So he says like...
Well, he is German, isn't he?
Yeah, that's probably why. Yeah, but I think some of his rules, whether they're German or not, are quite nice, because he says that a micro-adventure means that you don't use a car, or of course not an airplane, so it's more or less by fair means, or you use a public transport, and that it has to last at least 8
Oh, is it 8?
At least 8?
Oh, right.
I think so, yeah. It can be a day thing. Oh, did it used to be 72?
I think it used to be 72.
Yeah, maybe
he's getting old and soft.
He has kids too.
Yes, exactly.
Next year will be 7:45.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, I interrupted you. What are the other rules? Yeah,
you know, no, the question, I don't know all of them, but I was just wondering, do you also think there need to be some rules? Or because otherwise I could say, okay, I'm going for a day hike. I start right where I live. I walk around in the woods, I eat my sandwich, and then I go back home, and it was a nice day. But was it a micro-adventure, really? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that the idea of rules is, I've thought a lot about it. So going for a walk and a hike and having a sandwich, for you, because I've known you a little bit, that's not really a big adventure. That's just you going for a hike. But for someone who's never been out of a city before, and never walked more than 10 minutes, that could be the biggest adventure they've ever had in their life. So
that's
then
true. Yeah.
Who am I to say, no, that doesn't count as an adventure. So my take on the rules idea is that if it feels like an adventure to you, then it is an adventure. And geez, who cares what rules there are on these things? But I do think there's a big difference in your experience between going for a hike for a day and having your sandwiches and coming home, compared with going for a hike for a day, having your sandwiches, sleeping on a hill, and coming home.
Yeah, that's right.
And I really think that's a very, very different experience and feeling, to put that the night and the outdoors and that change in sensations you get from being out overnight. I think that makes it, in my mind, a very different experience. I think another advantage of having some rules is that... So I started by using the microadventure hashtag, and that was really helpful in the first few years for bringing together this community. But now it's a fairly useless hashtag, because it's just sprinkled around the internet with pictures of pretty girls fishing, or guys driving their motorbike, or someone having a cup of coffee in a yoga pose. So there is a sense for that. But I think my short answer is, if it feels like an adventure to you, then that's fine. What you define as an adventure is up to you.
Okay. I try the sleeping on a hill thing, I think.
Yeah. In my mind, though, I do think, for it to be an adventure, it needs to feel a bit new. It needs to be a bit difficult, a little bit frightening in some ways.
You have to move out of your comfort zone a little bit. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It has to be unfamiliar and different and new and a little bit difficult and a little bit, out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Okay.
You mentioned ticks earlier. I wanted to come back to that before I think we have to come to an end soon. But ticks, they can be dangerous. We all know that. What would you recommend?
Ticks, ticks are definitely a problem. The weird thing is, I've never had a tick in my entire life. And I don't know why this is, because I do all sorts of things that are very not sensible tick behavior. But I've never had a tick. But yeah, for sure, it's tucking your trousers into your socks and checking yourself and removing them in the safe way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the bivy bags are not great in tick places for sure. Mm-hmm. You might want a hammock for this, or at least a ground sheet to put down for that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've never had a tick in all my life.
Maybe because you climb trees all the time. Yes, they don't climb on trees as we know. Okay, Alistair, thanks a lot for visiting us and our audience to encourage, inspire us to live more adventurous throughout our daily life. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Das war's für heute. Wenn euch unser Podcast gefällt, dann abonniert uns doch, um auch die nächste Folge nicht zu verpassen. Bis dahin findet ihr unser Outdoor-Magazin gedruckt am Kiosk oder digital unter www.outdoormagazin.com und natürlich auch bei Facebook und Instagram. Danke an dich, Katharina, für das Interview.
Vielen Dank dir and thank you, Alistair. And by the way, für alle da draußen, Ticks sind Zecken.
Ja. Bis dann, wir sagen Hauptsache draußen.